Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 27 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 3rd of July, 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by Dusty, Margaret H and Julie, with help and assistance from Chief Engineer Stephen. And in the news this week, Yarmouth could be aping Birmingham with a bin strike. It's goodbye to the Halifax. And the Duke's got brand new curved windows. All this plus Grapevine Extra with Dusty on Radio Comedy and Julie chasing a tent. Firstly, though, a birthday, and we send our very best wishes to Pauline Connett for Tuesday the 7th. Hope you have a great day, Pauline. Okay, it's time for the first part of the local news, so over to the Gang of Three.
The Norfolk Coast has been praised as one of the UK's best summer staycation destinations. Travel discovery site Roam to Rio said searches for coastal getaways have surged over the past fortnight, with Cornwall topping the list and Brighton and Bournemouth also proving popular. While the biggest attention has gone to the south coast, Norfolk still made the top 10, with 334 searches in the last 14 days, showing it remains a firm favourite for holidaymakers. The county's appeal lies in its wide beaches, big skies and easygoing coastal charm, offering a quieter alternative to some of the busier UK hotspots. Popular beaches recently praised by critics include Holcombe, which was named as one of the most startlingly beautiful white sand beaches by writers of the Telegraph. Norfolk was also highlighted as one of the best places in the UK for a holiday closer to home by writers at the Condé Nast Traveller. They specifically praised North Norfolk, describing the coast and beaches as the main appeal.
Well, hello again, everybody. We're at my house today. It was too hot at Julie's. So I've just read the first headline here, and it says, "The best place for thrill seekers." I don't know if that's quite about my house, but anyhow. Here we go. The town has been named as one of the region's top destinations for thrill seekers. Great Yarmouth ranked third overall in a new study by Adult Work, with the seaside resort boasting 15 venues with so-called high adrenaline attractions. The study considered theme park rides and roller coasters alongside go-karting and water parks as attractions that meet the adrenaline quota. Yarmouth's Golden Mile is home to two theme parks, Pleasure Beach and Joyland, and boasts several thrilling rides such as the roller coaster and the less intense Snails. Yes.
My favourite.
The research analysed more than 3,000 venues offering activities such as skydiving and climbing. At 353 local authorities across the east of England, they were ranked to identify the country's best places for adventure. Huntingdonshire took the top regional spot with 20 venues, and East Suffolk placed second with 16. A spokesman for Adult Work said the results show people do not need to travel far for new experiences. He said, "There's a huge amount right on our doorstep, whatever your appetite is for risk. Whether it is white-knuckle thrill or a relaxed day on the water, The UK is full of opportunities to try something new. Well, there you are, a thrill a minute.
The pub is revising its opening hours to help manage rising costs and remain financially sustainable. The Thirsty Crow Tap Room in Gorleston will no longer open on Thursdays and Sundays to better secure a future for the business. The pub sits in Lowestoft Road and is the first independent tap room in the town. It will be open on Fridays and Saturdays from 2 until 11 p.m. A spokesman for the pub said in a statement on social media, "This hasn't been an easy decision, but it's the right one financially and will allow us to focus on our busiest trading days while we work towards a more sustainable future for the tap room. We know this may disappoint some of you and we really appreciate your understanding and continued support. We hope to see as many of you as possible over the coming weeks." The Thirsty Crow opened in 2023 and changed owners earlier this year. It offers a wide range of cask ales and craft beers from independent microbreweries across the UK. The bar also hosts live music most weeks, as well as wine tasting events.
The door has been left open for a rethink over the controversial scrapping of a scheme which meant Norfolk councillors could spend up to £11,000 a year on highways projects. David Bick, the reform leader of Norfolk County Council and the cabinet member for financial responsibility, was accused of pettiness by his political opponents after he used his powers to axe the Highways Local Member Fund. Reform had said ditching that initiative meant almost £1 million could be returned to the overall highways budget coffers for resurfacing and fixing potholes. The fund, in place since 2017, allowed each of the council's 84 members to allocate up to £11,000 annually for small-scale highways projects in their divisions. Eligible schemes included speed limit reductions, grit bins, footpath extensions and electrical vehicle charging points. Brian Watkins, leader of Liberal Democrat Group, previously branded Reform's decision to drop the scheme as a petty and small-minded proposal. At a meeting of the Reform-controlled cabinet on Monday, June the 29th, Lib Dem councillor Adam Varley urged Mr. Bick to reconsider. He said, "Can I ask the leader, will he strongly consider revoking this decision and allowing members to be involved in this process, which will have detrimental consequences for all our communities?" Mr. Bick said, "There are a number of factors that contributed to this decision. Keep in mind that the local member fund was originally carved out of the highway budget. What the rationale was at the time for carving it out like that, I have no idea." Mr. Bick said there would be a bigger bang for the residents' buck by relocating the money as ring-fenced highways cash for maintenance in the council's north, south, west and city areas. He said, "I do accept that that would lead to some disappointments for people who have project ideas in their minds. I will say, as I said to Councillor Watkins, that if our experience over the next year doesn't deliver the increased performance that we've been led to believe we will get, then we will review it, but not for this year."
A driver has been reported after being clocked racing down a road in a seaside village at more than twice the speed limit. The driver was stopped by the Norfolk and Suffolk Roads and Armed Policing Team in Kingsway, Hemsby, on Sunday evening. They were clocked travelling at 79 miles per hour and were reported for speeding as a result. A spokesman said the team were out conducting fatal four checks in rural villages. The driver thought it would be acceptable to travel through Hemsby at more than twice the speed limit He was, of course, reported for speeding.
There will be an increased police presence on roads in Norfolk this month as part of a road safety campaign. The campaign focuses on speeding, drink and drug driving, using a mobile phone at the wheel and not wearing a seatbelt. There will be a speed enforcement campaign running during the first 2 weeks of July to address driving behaviour. It will see an increased police presence on Norfolk's roads, a spokesman for the force said. Chief Inspector Gary Miller from the Roads and Armed Police Team said, "While this campaign provides us with the opportunity to focus on all the fatal four offences, we will be dedicating time and resources to speeding specifically." The campaign is led by the National Police Chiefs Council. In 2025, speed was a contributing factor in nearly half, 48% actually, of all fatal collisions in Norfolk. During the World Cup, officers will be on hand at fan zones and popular venues throughout the tournament to ensure that those travelling home are doing so safely.
A local village street scooped a whopping £30,000 prize in last month's postcode lottery. Norfolk won big throughout June, with three different locations getting lucky in the national draw. Winning spots included the Street in Ringland, Manson Green in Hingham, and Sunnyside in Birkhampton, with players scooping £1,000. Most impressively, lucky participants living in NR295EG Main Street in Rollesby scooped a staggering £30,000. Playing the postcode lottery cost £12 a month, with 33% of the ticket money going to good causes. There are 20 draws each month, and winning postcodes are announced daily.
A Norfolk swimming star has launched a fundraiser after her premature baby was born at only 23 weeks and is now fighting for her life. Jessica Jane Applegate, the Great Yarmouth sportswoman who won Paralympic gold at just 16, is now facing a very different kind of battle. Her premature daughter, Alara, who was born weighing just more than 1 pound, is in a specialist neonatal intensive care unit, and the family has launched a public fundraiser to cover the overwhelming costs of being away from home during her long hospitalisation. Miss Applegate from Belton retired from swimming in December last year. Shortly after the announcement, she and her partner, Declan Jeremy, received life-changing news that they were expecting their first child. Miss Applegate said the pregnancy brought early complications as she experienced significant bleeding for many weeks due to a hematoma. By 16 weeks, the couple learned that they were expecting a girl. They had already chosen the name Alara, but waited until their 20-week anomaly scan before sharing the news publicly. At 22 weeks, Miss Applegate attended a repeat scan, as some checks had not been completed at the 20-week appointment, and she had experienced some fresh bleeding. The hospital was preparing to send her home when Mr. Jarmy asked staff to examine her first. While waiting, Miss Applegate said that she suffered a severe bleed, and after 48 hours in hospital, clinicians discovered she was already dilated. But the hospital she was at was not equipped to care for a baby born at that gestation, placing the family in an agonising position. Miss Applegate said, "Transferring me to a level 3 neonatal intensive care unit was incredibly risky, but we were told that if our daughter was born where she was and where we were, her chances of survival were extremely small. We decided to take that risk because we wanted to give Alara every possible chance." Against considerable odds, Miss Applegate held on for a further 10 days after the crisis point, and Lara was born on May 29th at 23 weeks and 2 days gestation, weighing just 525 grams. Described by her parents as smaller than the palm of a hand, her original due date was September 23rd. Clinical data shows that approximately 4 in 10 babies born at 23 weeks will survive, and the likelihood improves significantly with each additional day of gestation. Alara was placed on life support immediately after birth and has since undergone surgery, received multiple blood transfusions, and has been battling with lung development. Our little warrior has already overcome more than most people face in a lifetime, she said. Clinicians have begun a course of steroids to help her lungs mature, and Miss Applegate reports that Alara has responded well. As of the fundraiser post, Alara is 1 month old and has reached 27 weeks corrected gestation. The family says that the goal is for her to begin spending short periods off the ventilator. She is expected to remain in hospital until at least her original due date, and potentially longer. Miss Applegate became one of Norfolk's most celebrated athletes when she claimed Paralympic gold in the women's S14 200 metres freestyle at London 2012, aged just 16. She went on to compete at 3 Paralympic Games in total, winning 7 international medals, including further gold, silver and bronze finishes at Rio 2016 and Tokyo 2020 and 21. In December 2025, after missing out of selection for Team GB for the Paris 2024 Paralympic Games, Miss Applegate announced her retirement from competitive swimming, a decision she said has taken me a full year to verbalise. Miss Applegate and Mr. Germany have launched a Just Giving campaign with a 5,000 target. The appeal explains that Mr. Germany has had to step back from work to support both Miss Applegate and Alara, and that paternity leave and statutory pay do not cover the reality of the situation. The Just Giving page for Alara can be found at justgiving.com crowdfunding/Jessica-Jane-Applegate-2. Bliss, the UK charity for premature and sick babies, estimates that nearly 50,000 babies are born prematurely in the UK each year, roughly one in every 13 births.
A member of a boat crew has died after being pulled from the sea off the Norfolk coast. Police were called at 6:36 p.m. on Tuesday after a man in his 60s on board a vessel at Caister entered the water. A person was located using a Coast Guard helicopter before being pulled from the water by the independent Caister lifeboat team. Police said crew members carried out CPR until a Coast Guard helicopter was used to winch a paramedic on board. Sadly, he was pronounced dead at the scene. The Caister lifeboat was deployed at about 5:20 p.m. and locals reported a large emergency service response. Crews from Winterton and Gorleston Coast Guard rescue teams were also sent to the scene. The vessel has since been taken to Great Yarmouth and will remain in port under a police cordon while investigations continue. Police said the death was not being treated as suspicious and a file was being prepared for the coroner.
Hundreds of people are backing a football club's bid to return home, as some neighbours are fighting the plans. Gorleston FC wants to build a new £4 million stadium and community hub at the town's recreation ground. The plans have attracted overwhelming public support, with more than 300 people noting the club's historical connection to the Rec, the benefit to young people, and the chance to regenerate a space many describe as neglected. Gorleston FC, began life at the recreation ground in 1889 and played there for 93 years. The club currently shares the Wellesley ground with Great Yarmouth FC, and many supporters say attendances have suffered as a result. One supporter from Old Farm Road said, "Ironically, on the pitch, the club is now at its most successful. But off it, the attendances have never been so poor. I have no doubt that they will treble in numbers easily if the club returns to Galston. Else I fear it will fade away forever." The club's £4 million proposals include a 3G pitch with spectator stands, a clubhouse, a 100-space car park, 3 additional training pitches, and perimeter fencing. Galston FC has 32 teams and 700 players and volunteers, and has outlined a community programme covering women's and girls' football, disability sessions, mental health initiatives, and over-55s activities. Graham Haken, the club vice chairman, said, "This would be a tremendous asset for local people and is a once-in-a-generation opportunity for the community to secure the future of the club." Not all residents share the enthusiasm. With plans facing more than 70 objections, many from people living next to the site, their main issue of concern is parking. They say roads surrounding the wreck, including Recreation Road, St Andrews Road and Church Lane, are already under pressure from the adjacent college. A group opposing the plans, Red Card to the Recreation Road Takeover, was established in February 2026, shortly after Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Cabinet agreed to grant the club a licence to occupy the site with the potential of a 75-year lease subject to planning. Chris Harris, lead campaigner, said their main concern was that access to the wreck would be restricted. According to the plans, grass pitches would be off-limits to the public between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. on weekdays and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at weekends from September to April, and from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on weekdays in summer. Mr Haken has pushed back on the concerns. "Our lease, with its operating hours, was approved after a public consultation process," he said. "We've had a licence from the council for 2 years and have only used it for 8 hours a week in the football season for children's football at weekends." He added that the skate park, play area and multi-use games area would remain under council ownership, and said the club already spent £12,000 on football foundation money improving the pitches, with a further £20,000 to follow. "The public will have the use of new facilities at the community hub, toilets, the cafe, and enhanced safety in a place designed to be a safer place," Mr Haken said. The club is hoping planning permission will be granted next month. If approved, a formal 75-year-old lease would be signed and Galston FC would take over maintenance of the whole site.
As new windows are installed at the derelict Art Deco pub on the seafront, its operators have stepped forward to reveal their plans for the venue. The Iron Duke, the Grade 2 listed pub on North Drive, has stood empty since 2007. But a £2.4 million grant from the National Lottery Heritage Fund, alongside support from Historic England, is funding what the Great Yarmouth Preservation Trust hopes will be a full and faithful revival of the 1930s landmark. In recent days, fitters have been installing replicas of the building's original curved Art Deco windows. Meanwhile, the building's new operators have stepped forward to clear up confusion about what the reopened venue will actually look like. Zach's, the Norfolk Diner Group, co-owned by Chris Carr and Ian Hagen, confirmed this week that the Iron Duke will reopen as a proper pub and destination in its own right. Not, they stressed, just a Zach's or a burger bar. This is about restoring something special for Great Yarmouth, not replacing it, the fair said. Inside, drinkers and diners can expect two distinct spaces. Duke's Bar will pour pints of Lakin's beer, a nod to history, since Lakin's was the Iron Duke's original owner and brewer, alongside Art Deco-inspired cocktails. The new operators also said that a separate dining room, the Iron Chop House, will focus on quality cuts, local seafood cooked in view of customers, and Norfolk and Suffolk produce. In the past, the first floor provided accommodation for the pub manager. This space will now be repurposed to create two holiday flats. The building, designed by architect Arthur W. Ecclestone and completed in 1948, sat derelict for the best part of two decades before restoration began in earnest earlier this year. The final phase of the restoration began in March, with the venue expected to reopen by late summer this year.
Hundreds of customers in Norfolk will see their bank accounts moved as a national brand is scrapped. Lloyds Banking Group has announced that Halifax will be phased out over time, meaning customers will have their accounts transferred to Lloyds, which currently owns Halifax. The branches in Great Yarmouth, King's Lynn and Norwich will eventually be rebranded as Lloyds, but there are currently no plans to close them as part of the process. This decision marks the end of one of Britain's best-known banking names, which has been part of the High Street since 1852. The move is part of Lloyds Banking Group's wider strategy to streamline its consumer banking operations and to offer a consistent experience under its flagship Lloyds brand. Jaz Singh, who leads consumer relationships at Lloyds, said, "As Halifax changes to Lloyds, our Halifax customers will keep everything they know and love today. The same fantastic app design, the same friendly faces in our branches, even the same sort code and account number. But as Lloyds customers, they'll get the best innovation and experiences we offer. Our Lloyds customers are already benefiting from a significant investment into propositions like Club Lloyds, Lloyds Premier, Lloyds Ultra and Lloyds Rewards. And now we're really excited that Halifax customers can bank on Lloyds for more. Customers will continue to use the same branches with no changes to account numbers or sort codes during the transition. Direct debits and standing orders will also remain unaffected for the time being. The branch at 150 London Road North in Lowestoft will be shutting as part of a raft of closures that will see 55 other Halifax branches closing across the country. Lloyds Banking Group said that with the pivot to online banking, footfall in branches has plummeted.
County council leaders hope to recruit an interim chief executive to replace the departed top officer at County Hall within the next few days, with an advert for a permanent replacement to follow. Tom McCabe quit as Norfolk County Council's £209,000 a year chief executive last Thursday, just over a month after Reform UK took control of County Hall. Mr McCabe has already left the authority, and the process to appoint a temporary replacement has been taking place this week. It's understood the authority is hoping to make an announcement about who will step into Mr McCabe's shoes on a temporary basis within days. But the authority will also be starting the process to recruit a permanent successor to Mr McCabe, who'd been at the helm of the county's biggest council for almost 8 years. At a meeting of the council's reform-led cabinet, Kate Hullett, the council's head of legal services, said, "I can confirm that there will be a short process this week in order to establish an interim chief executive. And further this week, we'll look to commence a process for a permanent chief executive, which, as you might imagine, will be a public process with an advert going out this week." Mr. McCabe, who was previously the council's executive director of community and environmental services before taking the top job, has already left the authority. The 39-strong reform group took control of the authority, which was previously Conservative-led at May's elections. There have been reports of concerns among staff following the change, with one of the first acts of the new administration to lower the Ukraine flag at County Hall as part of a new policy, which also means the Progress Pride flag will not be flown on council buildings. Trade Union Unison also said it was aware of members who are feeling vulnerable and targeted in the wake of Reform's recent election success and the changes that they have made since the new administration began, and invited people to attend an online meeting to discuss their concerns. But at Monday's cabinet meeting, council leader David Bick said he had seen no evidence that relationships with council and staff had been fractured, as one opposition councillor had put it.
Reason for playing that piece of music, which is called Trade Wind Hornpipe, will become clear if you listen to Grapevine Extra. Part two of this week's news is coming up in a nonce, and yes, Grapevine Extra will be coming up straight afterwards, with the ladies and Stephen giving their all. First, though, a reminder message from David Wilkinson about the forthcoming Crime Commissioner's election on the 16th of July. The reminder is about the local availability of the McGonagall voting machine for those who would not otherwise be able to vote. Several people, including David and fellow Grapevine member Sean McGarry, find it ideal and have used it for previous elections, so why not try it yourself? Booking details for the machine will be on Grapevine next week, and there are two machines available for sharing around the borough. There's no charge for the machine's use. OK, time for more news, so back to the assembled cast of thousands. Exaggerating? Would I do a thing like that?
A bus route has been discontinued just ahead of the busy summer season. Connect Bus has withdrawn the 717 service, which connected Hemsby and Norwich, citing the passengers' low usage. A spokesman for the Norfolk County Council said, "The weekday service was withdrawn in April and replaced with the new Route 2. This was a commercial operator decision, as not enough people were using it, and ultimately all routes need to be financially viable in order to be sustained. The service still runs on a Saturday, renumbered 2A, and there are now advanced services from Caister for passengers wishing to travel to Norwich or into Great Yarmouth. Steve Hewitt, Secretary of Passenger Campaign Group, the East Norfolk Transport Users Association, said his organisation had heard no complaints about the service being out. In the summer, it could have been good for tourists wanting to go somewhere other than Yarmouth, he said. A spokesperson for Hemsby Parish Council said it was surprising that Connect Bus cancelled the service ahead of the summer when there would be more visitors in Hemsby. Meanwhile, the Passengers Association said that had welcomed the return of Service 100, our bus Wherry 100 service, which connects Great Yarmouth Railway Station with the seafront, town centre and Vauxhall Holiday Park. Mr Hewitt said, "'Twill help rail travellers and others to continue their journey from Great Yarmouth Railway Station into the town or to the seafront. The service also offers passengers connections at market gates into all other local buses to destinations in town, Gorleston or further afield. The bus was originally going to be axed last year before it was saved when new operator Ambassador Travel took over the service.
Derek Licht's plot in a seaside village could one day become affordable homes or a new village hall. Plans have not yet been revealed for the site of Caister's old youth centre on Yarmouth Road, but the parish council is exploring options for the plot. The building next to the Tesco superstore was demolished around a decade ago, and since then the land has stood empty. The parish council, which owns the site, has now commissioned surveys, flood risk assessments, and planning consultants as it works towards a formal pre-planning application. Kevin Wood, chair of the Caister Parish Council, said no decision had yet been taken on what would be built. The parish council could build a new village hall or sell the land and build a new village hall somewhere else, he said. Before we do anything, we will consult the public. Minutes of recent parish council meetings, however, indicate that a range of options, including housing, is being considered. A new build working group meeting held on the June the 15th was attended by a Great Yarmouth Borough Council Housing Strategy Officer and a Rural Housing Enabler from Community Action Norfolk, specialists typically involved in affordable or community housing schemes. The Council has set aside more than £390,000 in earmarked reserves for the project and has already spent money on site clearance, Japanese knotweed treatment and professional fees, including 4,250 planning statement and sequential test commissioned from Collective Community Planning. A sequential test is a planning requirement to demonstrate that no more suitable alternative sites exist for a proposed development. The process made more complex by Caister's coastal flood risk designation. The council has pledged to hold a public consultation before any final decision is made. A separate and still active youth charity, Caister Youth and Community Centre, is located on Faro Drive.
A major UK bank's U-Tone means its customers in Norfolk should soon be able to deposit cheques in person at the county's post offices and banking hubs. MPs have welcomed the decision by Lloyds Banking Group after pressure from a cross-party group of more than 120 members of Parliament, including seven from Norfolk. Lloyds stopped accepting the cheque deposits in December, a move which had triggered criticism. Age UK research shows about half of people aged 65 and over still use cheques, and given the demographics of Norfolk,
county politician said Lloyd's decision was having a particular impact on those people. Lloyd's has now said it will seek to restore cheque deposit services at post offices and banking hubs until the end of 2030. The change is dependent on Lloyd's reaching a commercial agreement with the post office. A Lloyd's Banking Group spokeswoman said, while only 0.1% of personal payments were made by cheque, it understood some customers valued being able to deposit them at post offices. She said, cheque use continues to decline and most of our customers deposit them through our app, at our branches and via our free post option. While these services are working well, with many customers choosing these quicker, more convenient options, we recognise some customers want greater choice and we're working to make cheque deposits available through the post office and banking hubs until 2030.
Strong action has been demanded after piles of rubbish mounted up on a Norfolk beach over the weekend. The bins by Sea Pauling Beach were overflowing, with rubbish blowing across the promenade during the busy heatwave. The scenes of rubbish piling up has prompted calls for more to be done to keep our region's beaches free of rubbish. Calls have been made for the District Council to ensure that bins are emptied regularly and for beach goers to take more responsibility over their litter. It comes as North Norfolk Council says it is monitoring the situation, has increased the number of bins in the region and adjusted collection times to meet demand. Matthew Taylor, County Councillor for St Pauling, said, I completely support calls to bring forward added collections during the busy summer months. It's important that we ensure our beaches remain beautiful destinations. They are an asset that prop up our Norfolk tourism economy. I hope the council will take action to ensure collections are more frequent and waste is removed before it piles up. Others argue the issue goes beyond council services, pointing to the behaviour of some beachgoers. Environmental charity Keep Britain Tidy echoed that message, advising that when bins are full, people should take their rubbish home rather than leave it behind. Councillor Callum Ringer had picked up 4 bags of rubbish from Crome Beach during the heatwave, he said. And he said, take your litter home. It's not rocket science. The council provides literally hundreds of litter bins across the district. There is no excuse for leaving your rubbish on the beach. The issue has also sparked strong reactions on social media, with many people expressing anger and disappointment at the state of local beaches. One person said, the rubbish this year is a joke. Why do people think it's okay to leave their rubbish behind on the beach like this? Another said, why some people are so selfish and mindless is beyond me, ruining it for everyone, and the damage to the environment and the sea is not even taken into consideration. Others call for a cultural shift in attitudes towards littering. With tourism playing a vital role in the local economy, there are increasing calls for a joint effort to protect the county's beaches during the peak summer months. With Norfolk having 6 blue flagged beaches, locals have highlighted how visitors can leave litter behind on a beach which is recognised for its environmental standards. North Norfolk District Council has emptied the Sea Pauling bins according to its collection timetable. A District Council spokesman said, during the summer months, Norfolk County District Council's waste collection and street cleansing schedule is designed to deal with additional demand caused by an increase in the number of people. The exceptional weather has meant that more people on the beaches and in the towns and the councils has increased the number of bins in key locations and adjusted some collection hours to reflect this change in demand. North Norfolk District Council and our contractors, Serco, are monitoring the situation carefully and with another period of hot weather forecast, we'll continue to make necessary adjustments to the collection schedule where appropriate. Our towns and beaches are among the top reasons that residents and visitors alike flock to North Norfolk, and we celebrate being a destination in demand. Where possible, we ask members of the public to take their litter home with them for disposal to help keep the whole district clean. Further on the coast, the MP for Great Yarmouth, Rupert Lowe, also strongly supported the calls to keep our beaches free of rubbish. He said, "Of course councils need to up their game, but actually this is an issue of personal responsibility. People need to be more careful and show more pride in our county. Put your rubbish in a bin, and if it's full, take it home with you." Although Norfolk is set for cooler weather this week, more sweltering air conditions may be on the way, potentially bringing more flocks of people to the coast.
A children's bookshop has officially closed its doors and is in the process of moving to its new site. Norfolk Children's Book Centre in Olby near Aylsham is beginning a new chapter by moving to Wroxham Barns. The shop is run by Matt Brocklehurst and his partner Annie Rhodes, after the pair took it over from Mr. Brocklehurst's mum and librarian Marilyn Brocklehurst. Last summer, Mrs. Brocklehurst revealed she would be selling her house, which is where the shop remained, until closing for the final time on June 27th. In order to finance the move, the store put out an appeal to raise £40,000 to complete the new and improved Norfolk Children's Book Centre. Ms. Rhodes said that the new space is already looking fantastic and the finishing touches are being put into place before the build starts. Ian Russell, owner of Wroxham Barns, added, "We're absolutely delighted to welcome the Norfolk Children's Book Centre to Wroxham Barns this summer. Their passion for inspiring young readers and families perfectly complements what we offer here at Wroxham Barns, and we know they will be a fantastic addition for our younger visitors."
A Norfolk town is facing a summer of stink after bin collectors voted for industrial action over claims of unfair pay. Around 100 workers in Great Yarmouth will strike over a 3.3% pay offer from their bosses, council-owned Great Yarmouth Services. The striking workers also include street cleaners, tree surgeons, gardeners and grave diggers. Unite, the union, says that for most employees, the offer would not take them to the minimum wage, which increased by 4.1% in April. Unite General Secretary Sharon Graham said, "Great Yarmouth's pay offer is a slap in the face to workers that do hard, dirty work in rain, wind or oppressive heat to keep the town clean and tidy. They have Unite's total support in striking for a fair deal. Strike action, severely impacting household waste collections, street cleaning, landscaping and grave digging services during the height of the summer season will be announced in the coming days." Unite Regional Officer Claire Lees said, "Great Yarmouth Council will have to answer to the residents, businessmen and tourists about why it has caused a stinky summer by mistreating workers. The petty attempts at intimidation and interference have just made the situation worse. Unite claims that councils told the workers they should think themselves lucky with the legal minimum wage, as the town is a low-wage poverty area, and that if they were unhappy, they should work for Sainsbury's or Tesco." Mr. Lee said, "The only way this dispute will end is to stop disrespecting our members, sit around the table and negotiate an acceptable offer." The dispute also includes members of the Unison and GMB unions. Great Yarmouth Services is a wholly owned subsidiary of Great Yarmouth Borough Council. Unite understands that Great Yarmouth Services is currently honouring minimum wage pay rates. A spokesman for Great Yarmouth Borough Council said, "We're aware of the outcome of the union ballot. At this stage, this is a vote in favour of potential industrial action and does not mean that strike action has been confirmed." The council said they're waiting for formal notification from the unions regarding next steps. Until then, services continue to operate as normal, and we remain committed to engaging constructively with the unions to reach a resolution, they added. The council accused the unions of seeking a 20% pay increase, which would add approximately £1 million to the annual cost of delivering services. "As a responsible employer, we must carefully balance fair pay with protecting the services residents rely on and safeguarding local employment," they said. They claimed that meeting the pay increase in full would require significant reductions in services and could result in around one-fifth of the workforce, approximately 35 jobs, being lost. "We do not want to see that happen, which is why we remain committed to meaningful negotiations to find a fair and sustainable outcome that supports our employees while protecting jobs and services for the community," the council added.
A man has been spared jail for a blood-soaked assault that left a Norfolk police officer facing months of medical tests and treatment. Lewis Lumley had been attempting to flee from police after an altercation in Bradwell on February the 7th that had left his hands covered in blood. Norwich Magistrates Court was told that the 25-year-old had lashed out with his arms while being restrained, causing blood to enter the mouth of an officer. Yeah. Emma Pocknell, prosecuting, said the PC had subsequently required hospital tests, hepatitis jabs, and a prolonged period of medication. Lumley of Albany Road, Great Yarmouth, pleaded guilty to assault by beating of an emergency worker. The Sizewell C worker wept after being told he was not being sent to prison, which would have seen him lose his £60,000 job a year. District Judge Matthew Bone said, "In my view, what you put the officer through amounts to exceptional circumstances that puts it in the custodial bracket. However," he said, "he'd been persuaded to suspend an 8-week sentence for 12 months as he was a new father and had caring responsibilities for his mother. He ordered he paid the officer £1,000 in compensation."
Gentleman Jack's Barbershop, with locations in Acle and Rollesby, has two team members who have been named finalists in the 2026 UK Hair and Beauty Awards. Owner Ashley Parsons is up for Best Barber, while JJ Sayer is in the running for Best New Talent. The UK Hair and Beauty Awards celebrate professionals who excel in technical skill, creativity, customer service, and commitment to raising standards across the industry. To have two members of our team recognised nationally in the same year is something we're incredibly proud of, Mr. Parsons said. Every service is given the appropriate amount of time needed to achieve the highest possible standard, rather than rushing clients through the chair. These awards are a recognition of that philosophy and of the incredible effort our whole team puts into every haircut every single day. This achievement belongs just as much to our loyal clients as it does to our team. Mr. Parsons also revealed that another Gentleman Jack's location is planned to open later this summer. We also have another exciting milestone on the horizon with our third Gentleman Jack's location set to open towards the end of August, he added. While we're keeping the location under wraps for now, we can't wait to share more details in the coming weeks. It's shaping up to be our biggest and most exciting year yet. The UK Hair and Beauty Awards 2026 will be held on August 15th at the AO Arena in Manchester. Coastal Beauty Aesthetics, based in Blakeney, has also been shortlisted in two categories, Best for Aesthetics and Best Home Salon.
A woman was taken to hospital after an air ambulance was seen hovering over Great Yarmouth. The Anglia One helicopter was dispatched to Southgate Road at 3 a.m. on Tuesday to help the East of England Ambulance Service after a woman in her 50s suffered a medical emergency. Dr. Ben and critical care paramedic Will provided advanced care at the scene. The patient was then taken by land ambulance to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital. The East Anglian Air Ambulance shared a photo on social media of the helicopter on Great Yarmouth Beach. This amazing view from the crew on a quiet beach in Great Yarmouth was captured by Captain Henrietta on a night tasking, the caption said.
Welcome to Grapevine Extra, this week featuring Grapevine's own Nattering Ninjas on comedy and tent catching.
Well, I thought that we'd talk about something different today because I read a very interesting article in the EDP the other day about the golden age and the golden era of radio comedy, which I thought might interest our listeners because they probably love the radio just as much as I do. And it brought back some wonderful, and it will to you, Margaret, in a minute. You'll start to say, oh, yes, I remember that. as indeed we do. This starts by saying that the first golden age of radio comedy began in the 1940s with Itmar. Can you tell me what Itmar meant then?
It's That Man Again.
That's the one.
It's That Man Again.
That's it. Host is off. Don't call us, we'll call you. Hosted by that quickfire quip star. Go on, who? Tommy
Handley.
Thank you, that's the one. And asked and aided and abetted by such sagacious stalwarts as Colonel Chinstrap, I don't mind if I do, and Mrs. Mop, what'd she say?
Can I do you now, sir?
That's the one, yeah, can I do you now, sir? And all she really meant was can she clean it up for him, didn't she? But that was taken in lots of other ways. And the gloom-laden Mona Lott is being so cheerful it keeps me going. That's right. Itmar did much for our bulldog breed morale during the war years. Well, it did, didn't it?
It certainly did.
When humour provided a welcome distraction. That's really quite true, isn't it?
Certainly is.
Another tonic that tickled the nation's funny bone was, and you'll love this one, sing it for me, Margaret. Much binding.
Much binding in the marsh. Da dee 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 to the old pom pom.
A fictional.
Getting the pom pom.
Oh, don't forget the pom pom. A fictional RAF base somewhere in the back and beyond, which was written by and starred Richard Stinker Murdoch and Kenneth Horne. Wonder why they called him Stinker. Do you know where
he was? I don't know.
No, I don't know.
No, I don't know about that.
After peace was declared, anarchy took over the airways in the 1950s as ex-servicemen and former ENSA performers forged new careers with such pioneering comedy shows as, oh, I love that, Take It From Here, Don't Go Away If You Can take it from here. And that was lovely, wasn't it? Raise a laugh.
Yeah. Don't be sad and gloomy.
Educate Archie.
Yes.
That had Beryl Reid in it, didn't it?
It did.
And Peter, I loved it.
Peter Brough and Archie Andrews.
And, yeah, and she was played Marlene, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Oh, she said, Purse gave me more earrings. Or, do you like more earrings? She used to say, didn't she?
That's right, she did.
Do you like more earrings? Purse gave them to me. And then we had Hancock's half hour. That's a favourite of yours.
Oh, yes, I couldn't stand him.
But the Goons, one of the most groundbreaking of all comedy shows, and beyond our ken, which later morphed into Round the Hall, and you two love that, don't
favorite.
You?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sunday dinner. Listening to that
Round the Hall.
Under the writing partnership of Barry Took and Marty Feldman. Enlisted by the BBC, a new generation of comedians and comic actors graduated from the Cambridge Footlights and the Oxford Review. Well, of course, several people emerged from that, didn't they? And one of the people that we love is Stephen Fry.
Yes.
He did. Yes. His beautiful voice. I think he's got the most mellifluous, that's a good word, isn't it? Mellifluous voice. I can't spell it.
She had a dictionary. Anyway. She'd eaten a dictionary.
That's what it is, yes.
And we're encouraged to write and perform radio sketches. And a show, particularly a performer radio sketch show entitled, I'm sorry, I'll read that again, which subsequently introduced Bill Oddie, Graham Garton, Tim Brooke Taylor, and John Cleese, not to mention Angus Prune, to be an unsuspecting audience. Amid many groan-inducing puns and blatant spoofs and a frequent excess of silliness, there were genuine moments of hilarity interspersed with music and song supplied by Oddie, a talented tunesmith, before he became better known as a birdwatcher and wildlife campaigner. He still does. He's still talking about trying to save the orangutans, isn't he?
Yes.
One of the major benefits of I'll say that again, was the spin-off panel game show I'm Sorry, I Haven't Got a Clue. What's that other one that's on at the minute? There's not the news one, there's another one, isn't there? Would I Lie to You?
Yes, that's
oh,
right.
Oh, that is funny.
Yes.
Because that is very, very clever. That's the same sort of idea, isn't it? Devised by Graham Garden, this one particularly, Sorry I Haven't Got a Clue, began in 72 and is still going strong to this day, due to no small part in the rapier-sharp repartee supplied by the contestants. I agree with that.
Yes.
Many years later, the programme also began its own spin-off in the guise of You'll Have Had Your Tea, the doings of Hannah and Dougal, two characters who occasionally appeared in sequence from the long-running first show, were finally given their own series. And there's some still good ones on, aren't there, this of this nature. Written by Garden, Dougal, in collaboration with Barry Cryer. Now, Barry Cryer was a wonderful comedian, and his jokes are really good.
Mm.
If ever I hear any, bless him, he died not terribly long ago, didn't he?
Yes, I think he lived quite a good age.
He did. Oh, he did. Mm. And, he played Hamish, didn't he?
That's
each 15-minute episode of Hootsman Humour always features their saucy mix of a housekeeper, Mrs. Naughty, Alison Steadman, she's wonderful as well, and the carousing laird, Jeremy Hardy, who always maintains his honey-voiced caterwauling compared favourably with the warblings of Beyoncé. First aired on Radio 4 in 1978, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy may have sounded like an alien concept to many listeners, but it soon gained a cult following. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I wasn't terribly keen on that.
No,
were
I
you?
Have to admit, no, it didn't do it for me.
Do you remember that, Julie?
Yeah, a little bit.
Have you gone to sleep? Oh, all right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that. But, you know, I'm a bit younger. It's more my taste, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, for many years, the BBC has been the proving ground for some of the best radio comedy, from The Clitheroe Kid.
Oh, yes, Clitheroe Kid.
Don't Sam Mathers have them? Remember that? That was the watchword, wasn't it? The Navy Lark, that's your favourite.
Well, that's my favourite.
Oh, lovely,
Navy
yes.
Yeah, go on, yes. Tell us something about the Navy Lark.
Leading Seaman Goldstein chatting.
Left hand down a bit.
Leslie Phillips was in that, so
yes, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
The Navy Lark and the Men from the Ministry. To Lines from My Grandfather's Forehead. I don't remember that. Lines
Man from
My...
the Ministry had Leslie Phillips in it as well.
Yes.
Oh. It's a tradition that they've sought to continue, and throughout the 90s and the opening quarter of the new millennium, BBC Radio has nurtured a second golden age of comedy with the likes of Double Income, No Kids Yet, Hut 33, which is set in Bletchley Park, Cabin Pressure, I used to listen to that, and Claire in the Community, that's good as well. The latter charts the exploits of an insensitive social worker, superbly played by Sally Phillips, whose professional life is as chaotic and irrational as her private life. And those are the ones that have really come out into my mind. Well, tell me some of yours. Can you think of any others, you two? What about the Goons?
Oh, yes.
Hmm?
Yes, yes, that's right.
Did
yes.
you like the Goons?
Yes.
Well, they're very new, not as much as you did like the others, did you?
No, I understand Prince Charles, as he was then,
oh,
was
yeah.
a favourite.
He loved it.
Yes, he loved the Goons.
He did.
Yes.
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 And there was, Just a Minute.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Just a Minute. Yes, that's right. Old, what's his name, was on that, wasn't he, for... He was well into his 90s and he chaired that.
That's right. Now, what was his name?
He was a very smart little
Parsons.
Man.
Nicholas Parsons.
That's the one.
That's it.
Thank you, Julie.
Yes.
Nicholas Parsons. He certainly did. And there's a lovely picture in here of Peter Sellers, Harry Secombe. And of course, Harry Secombe had wonderful talents, not just comedy, but he's got a wonderful voice.
Yes,
yes.
Good singer, yes.
Yes.
And I remember there was always a Sunday night programme with Harry Secombe. Do you remember that, Stephen? And he used to have requests from people of their favourite poems and songs, and then he'd sing the songs.
Right, yes, yes, vaguely, yes. I was only a teenager in those years. So.
You weren't necessarily into that kind of thing at that point, no.
I loved Harry Secombe, and especially when he sang If I Rule the World.
Yes, that's right.
I love that song. That's from Pickwick, isn't it?
Pickwick.
Pickwick. And he made a lovely Pickwick, didn't he?
He was the right shape for it.
He was. Yes. He was. Yes, he was. And he played Mr. Bumble, didn't he?
Yes,
of course he did.
Well.
Yeah.
Talking of which, we'll do a commercial, shall we?
Yeah.
Would you like to do the commercial and tell them what we're doing?
What, right now?
Yes, right in the middle of my
show. Okay, right in the middle of everything we're doing?
Yes.
Well, it's 23rd of August this year, which is not far away now, and it's called Dusty Miller and Friends Invite You to Take a Seat at the Pictures. And the reason it's called the Pictures is because the show, which is going to be shown at Gorleston Pavilion Theatre, not only includes modern movies, but old
flicks.
Cinema, which is why it's called The Pictures.
They used to call them the flicks, didn't they?
Yeah.
Dusty
still goes to the pictures anyway. She doesn't go to the cinema, do you, love? You always go to the pictures.
The pictures.
Yep. So there we are. Tickets are £12. And
they are available at this moment in time.
Are.
And the proceeds are all for the Pavilion Theatre.
Yeah.
With a bucket collection.
For
my wonderful, wonderful friends, St. Elizabeth Hospice team, who looked after me so brilliantly.
Not just you, but...
No, they looked after me, but
they are wonderful people.
We went to the hospice at Beckles the other day, didn't we? And everybody was saying what a lovely
lyrical
quiet little place it is. And that's what we need. We've got to get that hospice going. And that's what they're trying to do.
Uh-huh.
So the more we can do for charity, the better it is. And I'm sure there's a lot of our listeners out there would be grateful to St. Elizabeth for their care. I'm sure they would. But we've got to have it. But there's a lovely picture here of, as I said, Peter Sellers, Harry Secombe and Spike Milligan.
Oh, Spike Milligan.
I mean, he was seriously on the spectrum, wasn't he?
Yes.
And yet, although you think he's off his head, really, he came up with some lovely poetry, you know. Serious poetry. Anyway, weren't we lucky to have the golden era of radio comedy?
We were.
I think so, and I would urge people. I'm very worried about particularly Radio 4 at the moment. They're going to have tremendous cuts.
Yeah.
They're cutting the presenters. My goodness knows how much. They're taking loads of the programmes out. We've not got to have the midnight news anymore, that kind of stuff. It's an absolute crime, I think, because we cannot lose that wonderful gem of radio. Radio is such a... I mean, Stephen will agree, I'm sure, that the media of radio is such a more intimate one than the television, wouldn't you say? Mm. You've got your television in your room, haven't you, and all that, but the presenters and so on kind of become your family, especially if you're alone. Lots of people look forward to that particular presenter as their friend.
Yes, you know? That's right. The person is talking to you.
Exactly, and they are talking to one person. Mm. Of course, that's the art of public speaking, isn't it, as well?
Yes,
you've got to pretend that one person's the only person in the room, and they've got to feel that they are.
Mm.
So important. Yeah. And, you know, the human voice is still such a wonderful, wonderful way to get things across.
Yes.
And reading poetry and all that. You know I'm nuts about poetry, but if you read poems, people say, I don't understand that. But if you read a poem out loud, you find the meaning of it. You think, oh, is that what it meant? You know? And so I would urge people who can read, I mean, I know lots of our listeners have found it difficult, of course they would, but don't forget the wonderful talking books, because they are great, aren't they?
They are.
They're terrific.
Oh, they are.
And so we're very lucky to have that kind of thing still going on. But do support the radio as well, because we don't want to lose it. So I think that's my little moral for today, and I hope you enjoyed that, and I hope it'll make people think of all the programmes they liked as well out there. So until the next time, my lovely friends, keep on a-troshing.
Like the man in the moon has when the moon beams. If I ruled the world, every man would say the world was his friend. There'd be happiness that no man could end. Oh, my friend, not if I ruled the world. Every hand would be held up high. There'd be sunshine in everyone's sky. If the day ever dawned when I ruled the world,
every hand would be held up high.
got a story which is quite topical at the moment, which is called, hold on, just talk amongst yourself for a moment.
Rhubarb. That's what we used to say on the stage. When there's a crowd scene.
When you can't think of anything.
A crowd scene, you know.
All the witches go rhubarb.
Yeah, you look as though you're talking, don't you?
Rhubarb.
You do ever so much with rhubarb.
So
it's quite incredible.
Have you found some this morning? You had some for your breakfast.
Yeah. Oh, we had some. Yes, it was very nice as well.
Indeed.
My little man from
Not my favourite fruit. Vegetable.
Do you know? Oh, it's lovely. Anyway, this is called The Misadventures of the Beach Tent.
The what? The Beach Tent?
The Beach Tent.
The Beach Tent. Oh, one peg at a time. Okay. Then.
So it was the peak of a sweltering July weekend. And after months of planning, my friends and I loaded the car and headed straight for the coast. The weather forecast was absolutely flawless. A gorgeous, sunny day. We arrived lugging coolers, inflatable flamingos, and a massive, brand new pop-up beach tent. We considered ourselves seasoned pros. However, the coastal breeze had other plans. We spent a solid 20 minutes wrestling the tent on the dunes while a growing audience of locals watched the spectacle. Finally, we got the nylon structure anchored, or so we thought, and set up our towels proudly inside. I settled back with a book, enjoying the roar of the tide. Then, out of nowhere, a sudden North Sea gust decided to test our engineering. The wind caught the tent like a kite, violently pulling the plastic stakes right out of the wet sand. Before I could even yell, the tent flipped up, rolled directly over my bewildered friend, and took off down the coastline like a giant blue tumbleweed. We scrambled to our feet, sprinting across the soft sand in a desperate attempt to chase our escaped shelter. We dodged sunbathers, tripped over discarded flip-flops, and frantically yelled, "Stop that tent!" The tent finally met its match when it collided directly with a very confused dog water, even Walker, and his golden retriever. The dog didn't even flinch, but it barked happily at the nylon monstrosity as if it were a giant new toy. As we approached, out of breath and thoroughly embarrassed, the rest of our beach snacks and towels blew completely away down the shoreline. Needless to say that we gave everyone on the beach a good laugh that afternoon. There we go. That's something that I would imagine hundreds of people have done in their lifetime.
Yes. I mean, you can just picture the scene, though.
You can't you?
Yeah.
But at the moment, people are becoming a lot more sun-conscious, aren't they? I mean,
yes,
when you walk
are.
Along the
yeah.
promenade, loads yes. of beach tents and stuff.
Yes. Mm. Yes, it used to be that the most you got was a windbreak.
That's it.
You
yeah.
used to have just those little cloth windbreaks yes, on three stakes
yeah.
and just shoved
yes,
in.
That's
right.
Yes, that's
the
one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
you
used to go on behind the windbreaks.
So. Trust me to think of something like that.
Yes. Well, of course I would.
Yeah.
Collecting
beach
chairs. Beach.
Low mind,
yes.
Haven't I?
Yes. And collecting beach chairs. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, well, never mind, it's all good fun.
It is.
And yes, it is, and it's all part of seaside life.
Oh, I was going to tell you, I went to the First Light Festival a couple of weekends ago, and the beach was absolutely ram-jam full of people, very, very hot, and although I watched things on the stage which were very, very good, I watched Punch and Judy.
Of course.
Haven't seen Punch and Judy.
That's your child in you coming out.
And yes. It has not changed one bit.
No.
They all look the same, and the stories are exactly the same. And the crocodile still eats the baby, and it gets made into sausages. And oh no, what happens? How's the baby get into the sausages? Oh yeah, he gets into the sausage machine, doesn't he? Yeah. Yes, Punch is left in charge.
Yes.
right, and he puts, because the baby cries, he puts the baby into the sausage machine. That's right, and then the crocodile comes and eats the sausages.
Yes.
You need educating. You need to go on to watch
it. It's a long time since
watch Punch and Judy show.
This night to a grasshopper.
No, no. Mm. All right, yes. you won't miss anything.
I remember doing a couple when I was a youngster at the beach. Yes,
that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Yes, do it.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, there's that actual Punch and Judy training school where you go to learn all the
really?
Lines and everything.
Is that?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sure
yes.
it is.
Yes.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Very
because
clever.
There's a guild of Punch and Judy or something like
oh,
that.
Really?
Yes, I remember reading that a few years ago.
Well, apparently the fellow who makes Punch and Judy puppets.
Yes.
We know they're real, really, don't we? But they,
yes.
you know. But he lives in Kensingland and exports them all over the world.
Mm.
So I'm reliably informed.
Ooh,
there we are.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, ladies, for another okay. lovely ramble and rumble or whatever sort of call it.
Okay.
And we'll right. hear from you in a few weeks.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Take care. God bless everyone.
Well, that's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your news readers will be Andy and Desney. So, we hope that you'll be able to join us for that, for much more of your local news. But in the meantime, here's hoping that you stay safe, well and cool, and from all your friends at Grapevine, enjoy your week, and it's bye for now.